previously on Popping Collars.
I see this ideology kind of play out a lot, of people saying our institutions need to grow in order to survive, and other people saying, no, our institutions need to maintain their core values. In order.
Now you're talking about the church again. I see what you're doing there. You're not fooling anybody on Popping Collars.
Ministers from around the country. All right, I'll just do it the real old-fashioned way. Welcome to Popping Collars. I am your host, Greg Knight. With me today, the stalwarts of Popping Collars, the ones that you've come to expect. Betsy Gonzalez, she sounds a lot like this.
I sound like this. I do.
And Kyle Goodman, he sounds a lot like this.
Hello.
Talking today about families and about how families work. So, in popular culture, the family comedy has existed as long as television has existed. As a matter of fact, I dare say there's never been a time when television has existed that there hasn't been a family comedy that's eventually sort of evolved into the family sitcom. And that goes all the way back to sort of Leave It to Beaver days and
Honeymooners.
Honeymooners days,
a very disturbing family
days. Yes. And taking us all the way through All in the Family, through Cosby Show, through Roseanne, to Modern Family and Two and a Half Men and all of the family sitcoms that we have today, which look very different from the family sitcoms that we saw back in the 50s on Nick at Night. I saw them on Nick at Night. Who saw them on Nick at Night?
I saw them on Nick at Night.
I think I saw them on Nick at Night.
It makes me wonder, though, what is it about this genre that's so appealing that it's so prevalent in popular culture? And this is probably a good place for you to jump off, Kyle, because I know you were infatuated with Full House growing up and would watch it religiously every Friday on ABC. What was it about the Full House cast that kept you coming back for more at week in and week out?
DJ Tanner.
How old were you in watching this show? Because
sure.
I think that makes this more or less creepy. With this.
Let's see. I watching Full House. I was probably like 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, that was about right. But I guess I was infatuated with Full House growing up, but, you know, that Friday comedy, you know, Family Block, that one. And,
Family Matters.
Family Matters. I like that one too. I don't know. I think what was so good about those shows was, you know, it was just, well, they were wholesome and yet funny. They reflected what, you know, maybe we were wanting to see in our own families. They were better. Maybe they were just the shows that I could watch growing up too. You know, I was not allowed to watch the Dallases and the Falcon Crests. So, you know, these were kind of my shows, the shows that maybe were for me as a kid.
So there's something there about wholesome entertainment, right?
Well, and it was also before the adults all became idiots. You know, I mean, I think that has now become siloed into the Disney Channel zone. of the not so smart adults on the scene, because all the adults seem to leave about a decade after Full House and that whole scene, right? But it was adults kind of trying to be real, that they don't exactly know what they're doing all the time, you know, and the kids don't know what they're doing all the time. And so my daughter watched an episode of Full House at the beach this summer, like, and discovered it like a new magical show that she had never seen before, and was totally able to relate to it and understand what the little, because the middle one, what was the middle one's name?
Was that DJ?
No, DJ is a little sister. Oh, come on.
Stephanie.
Right? Stephanie was struggling over what to wear on the first day.
Apparently, I did like Full House.
So you did a lot. So she didn't know what to wear, and so she was trying on all of these outfits and keeping her sister awake, and everyone was nervous about the first day of school. And that, universal, right? Go for that, and Ruby knew exactly what they were talking about. As a seven-year-old, it made total sense.
Right, that's the old Brady Bunch episode. I mean, that's I guess the thing about the family sitcom is that it's formulaic. You can just recycle the same stories over and over again because you know what works. And I think ultimately that's probably why the family sitcom has the legs that it does, and why producers look to put them on the air, and broadcasters look to have them in specific time blocks, is because they know that it's a bankable commodity. You can always count that people are going to watch 30 minutes of families doing silly things. But I wonder what the appeal of that is. Is it because we have our own families that we think are also silly, that are somehow represented on these shows? Is it because we're seeing a reflection of something about us, or what we think families are? Because those shows are set up in a very particular way, especially the older shows of, you know, father, wife, children. It's a very sort of static. I'm trying to think, what's the one with Mallory, Alex Keaton?
Family Ties,
right? Yeah, Family Ties. It's, you know, that was a show that was that depended heavily on everyone sort of staying the same character. And it became a problem when the youngest girl started to grow up, because all of a sudden the show dynamic had to change. So they had to bring in another little kid on the show in order to keep the show what the show was. And it makes me wonder, like, is there something about these shows that make them almost like time capsules, that they have to stay preserved somehow? Otherwise they lose what makes them special.
Well, and maybe that's partly why we see just the trope recycled again and again and again. You know, maybe a family has a certain shelf life on TV, and then you just, you know, reshuffle the parts and portray it again. And, you know, there are only so many new kids you can bring into a show like they did on that one, or the Cosby Show. You know, as you say, they just re-up the character. You know, the person changes. It's just the same dynamic. And, you know, eventually the show ends and you just present them again. New people, new format, new place, new set. But essentially it's the same family again.
I think it can be aspirational if your family doesn't look like that, or someone is missing out of that equation for you. And there were some shows that would do that, like The Courtship of Eddie's Father, and some older shows that didn't have all of the parental pieces in place. You know, then there would always be a dog of some kind, or a helpful nanny lady. You know, like, there was always Auntie. Somebody, right, the neighbor, right? You know, there's somebody filling in. So I think there's an aspirational quality as well as a reflective quality. So it can hit both those things for people. But I think in their own way, all of these shows also are time capsules, because they try to tackle the issues of the day that will confront the characters on the show. You know, whether it's, I mean, I don't think we ever worried about the Beeve smoking pot down the street with his friends. I don't think that happened. But you know, but there's the concept of bullies, and not being, you know, being the good kid, and and having a girl, you know, that you might like, or a boy you might like, that there's the stages of growing up and eventual separation from the family that happen to all of us, that there are these pieces of universal experience that you get to pull on those in the context of your time. So I remember on Family Ties, there was something about the mom's brother. Like he committed suicide, I think. I mean, there was, you know, every show would have kind of this thing, you know, who's going to talk about AIDS for the first time on a family sitcom? Who's going to talk, you know, who's going to talk about adoption? Who's going to talk about, having family members marrying people of the same gender, you know, whatever it is, the thing of the time, the shows try to tackle it. And I think it's what we like it because it can be confrontational. It can be the first time that comes into your home. Sometimes you don't know anybody who's like that or who's gone through that, and you watch somebody do it and it becomes like a little community.
But it comes into your home in a palatable way, I guess, is what it feels like. I mean, and I feel like we have a lot of pop culture these days that kind of color how we see the world. I think that we look back on these things and we think, oh man, you know, it was so much better when it was like, you know, when it was like it was back on the old Full House show. But it was never like that. You know, that was false. That was a false idea. But people think of it in terms of something that actually existed, maybe.
But there are truths that are in it, though, right? The life cycle truths. I mean, all that stuff is still true. You know, those are still true experiences. So there is truth in it. But whether or not it is true, I think those are two different things. Sorry, Kyle, go.
That's all right. I think there are a couple of different dynamics there. Thinking about, again, using Full House, and I don't know why we're hanging on that as an example.
Because Bob Saget is
there's
awesome.
So many mullets, so little time.
That's right. But, you know, one of the things that maybe is true about that, or I don't know, pick a different sitcom, is the way that families are configured. And I was thinking about this a little bit for the show. You know, oftentimes what we find on a sitcom is not just a 4 or 5 person traditional nuclear family. I mean, Full House, you had this house full of a single dad with 3 kids plus these 2 random other fellows, and then one gets married and the house gets fuller and fuller. You know, even going back to a show like Andy Griffith, I mean, that was not a show about a traditional model for the way that a family is or works. So maybe in that sense, these shows can be envelope pushing or at least, you know, challenging to the way that we might traditionally think about what a family looks like. But maybe the thing, Greg, that isn't ringing true is just the narrative that plays out over a 30-minute episode. You know, by and large, these things are all episodic, and there's sort of this, you know, very short and simplified narrative of, sin or wrongdoing and, you know, and repentance and forgiveness. I mean, things go wrong in every episode. You know, one of the children decides they're going to, you know, open the cabinet and break a dish or I don't know what, you know, whatever it is, whatever trouble they're getting into, you know, going out and, you know, going out, staying out late and coming home and parents are there tapping their foot, that, you know, whatever the simple narrative is, you know, they come home, they're scolded, they're told what's right, and then they're forgiven and sent to bed. And next week, are they grounded? Are they in trouble? Do we see them out, you know, painting the fence or, you know, doing extra chores or just sitting in their room? No, I mean, everything is sort of, you know, tied off in its neat little bow. Everything's wrapped up. Everything's put back together by the end. And then next week, we do it all again. And maybe that's what doesn't ring true. It's just this very simple, you know, simplified narrative of I don't know, sin and repentance and forgiveness. It's just all, it always just seems to wrap up. And life rarely works like that. usually the problems that we have in our families, our real families, are problems that persist over time and, in fact, build. And so, you know, after a whole season's worth of problems in our own real family, they're a mess, you know, not neatly tied up again and again and again.
So I like that idea of the simplified narrative, because I feel like in my position as the director of children and youth ministries, I run into this simplified narrative quite a bit. Which is something that exists, I think, in the church at large, certainly in mainline denominations, and I would argue in sort of the Christian church, you know, overall, which is declining numbers, right? Declining family members that are worshiping in our pews on a regular basis, right? I've been at a town hall meeting that the rector has presided over in a church, and so, you know, where the simplified answer is, well, why don't we have young families? I don't know, but we have this new, you know, youth director, or we have this new associate minister who's going to sort of bring this magic bullet, or this, you know, this is going to present something in a wholly unique way that's going to all of a sudden magically bring in new people into our midst. And I feel like that is a simplified narrative that we keep telling ourselves over and over in the church. And when it doesn't come true, we sort of look at each other and try to figure out, like, well, what did we do wrong? And it's because we're not necessarily figuring out what the real family narrative, what that complex narrative is, and where we fit into that mix as a parish, as a church.
Do you play guitar? Do you play guitar?
That's right. That's right. Can you play your guitar and get the kids to follow your guitar all the way to the chapel?
Like St. Patrick with the snakes. That's exactly what we're looking for. Well, I think that plays into a simplified narrative that somehow churches used to offer what families wanted, and somehow there's been a stopping listening and not doing that anymore. And I think that's oversimplified because it doesn't value the fact that family life itself has changed and what that looks like and what membership at a church means. You know, it's not tied to my standing in my community, what church I attend, you know, like it starts to almost feel like weird and uncomfortable at the church I go to on Capitol Hill. One of our members is on city council for a long time and ran for mayor. And so, like, people were always kind of like, can we talk about this politics stuff here at church? And people would want to, and yes, we should. And can he come in and do things? And what, you know, and so, but the where you go to church doesn't factor so much into where you are in your community. I mean, it depends on what your community values in terms of your kids, you know, growing up and or just watching my daughter grow up in this area. And how it's really kind of, you know, what sports clubs are you involved in? You know, oh, are you on the travel soccer team or are you on the regular soccer team? And are you going to independent school or are you going to the public school? And that in each of these things, the yearning for community is still present for the parents. So when you're able to, at a church, offer kind of, you really see people, oh, I was looking for other people to be with. That's what I was looking for, but I also have many more outlets to do that now. It can be the lacrosse group, and I love the moms there, and we hang out at the games and are really funny together. Or it's at, you know, the Girl Scouts, or it's at the PTA. And that it was always hard when you'd see parents come into the school I used to work at, new young parents, and they would want the school to be everything to them, to be their social group, to be their folks they hung out with on the weekends, to be the place for their kids who's going to find their best friends for the rest of their life. And we put a lot of pressure on finding our place. And that somehow along the way, church might have been something that people looked at, but it kind of became not so much in a way. Because it's kind of what is society valuing? What are they looking for as being, you know, I value my child going to church. Have I been great at that lately? No, I have not. Have I been beating myself up about it? Heck yes, I have.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm glad we were able to instill some guilt along the way.
Yeah.
See, that's what the church has to offer. Guilt.
Guilt.
Right, guilt.
Well, and I want to pick up that piece too, because I think that Yeah, that's one of the places where we're really suffering in church communities is, you know, we're still operating in that, I think, very conservative, old school and outdated mode of thinking about what a family is and is like. And oftentimes when your family doesn't fit that mold, when the pieces don't line up, then either it's judgment or it's, you know, it's just, you know, not having a schedule that lines up. I mean, we, you know, talking about, you know, young people in the youth group, and, you know, we sort of have to balance, you know, our activity and how we schedule things around, you know, folks is every other weekend with a parent, you know, schedule, you know, it, how do we make, you know, a regular commitment to youth group make sense for someone who can only be there half the time? And, you know, do they feel like they can only be half a member of the group, or how do we value them and find a fit for them when there's absolutely no way they're going to be there every single time?
It involves making a new system, right? I think we touched a little bit on this in the last episode where we were talking about, you know, what is the stand of the church? There's two different sort of paradigms that people kind of gravitate towards. One is, well, we need to create new models of doing church in order to attract people to, you know, to what it is that we're doing. So, you know, thinking of like emerging church stuff, or like Theology on Tap, or, you know, more midweek stuff, you know, getting out of the sort of weekly Sunday mold. And then there's the other side of that coin saying, no, we need to commit ourselves to the foundations of what makes our church our church. Mm-hmm. Like we need to just double down on, you know, for Episcopalians, like the prayer book. We need to just do that, you know, over and over again. Forget these new things. These new things are just red herrings. Other churches, I guess it would be, you know, we just need to commit ourselves to doing good worship and forget all these like fancy, you know, pants, like Bible studies and stuff. You know, we just need to commit ourselves to doing, you know, these things. And I feel like the families that I run into are trying to find both. They're trying to find, you know, a sacramental theology that's rooted in something. But they're also trying to find something that kind of fits into their schedule. Right. They're trying to find something that works. And Sunday doesn't necessarily always work. It's a good day to sleep in.
Well, and to really say we value how you are with your family. You know, if it's sleeping in and then all cooking breakfast together and, you know, doing that, you know, who am I to say that that's not fellowship and not gathering around a table in a different way than what you offer in a church community? And I think when things get broken open is when we can let go of some of the shame and the judgment by naming it for people, to say, mm-hmm. we recognize, you know, that you're bouncing back and forth between two families. You know, you are a whole member of this youth group, no matter who or where or how many times you're here. You know, you are loved in here no matter what, you know. And I think it's, like, I would say that the family sitcom that touches me the most now is Modern Family. And I think because it allows the characters to act out of that shadow part of themselves that is not so attractive and not so loving all the time, that we all have our own agendas as we walk through this world, and we try to hold those agendas in a way that do not hurt other people. But there are times when we want our way, and we want things to look a particular way, and we want our family to act a particular way. Gosh darn it, they better, you know, and we want particular things out of each other. And that sometimes we try to ply the situation to work in our favor. And they show that on that show in a way that it doesn't mean the characters don't love each other. It just means they're human beings and they're acting like human beings. And that, you know, we can do those things, and then, as like Kai was saying, make those mistakes, and how can we come back from that forgiveness? You know, I'm trying all the time to wrestle with being a human being and living in this world and raising a family. What does that look like? And being the best me I can, and trying to coach my kid to be the best her or she can be. You know, it's a lot. And I think to open and acknowledge that and to give in to the complexity of it, I think allows the people in our communities to do that too. It allows them to try to not fit themselves into a get my little girls in their Sunday dresses and come to church and we love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we might not, and what might that look like for us? What could something else look like?
Yeah, and I guess what we try to, you know, what I feel like that involves is it involves education, but I don't know where that education happens, because a lot of the parents that I see are on kind of a guilt trip of, well, I think I know what a church experience needs to be for my kids. And when I think of families, I tend to think of, you know, units that have children, because that tends to be like what I work in. And I recognize that family doesn't have to be that. Family can be all kinds of different things. But certainly for families that have children, there is this sense of, well, I sort of want them to be taught something, but I don't know what it is. But I think I was taught it maybe when I was a kid. And I think that you have it, but I don't know like what kind of commitment is involved. And I don't know, you know, how often I can get them here, you know, or anything like that. But there's something about the church environment that it feels like parents need to bring their kids to it and need to doll them up and sort of dress them up, yeah, because they think that that's what's appropriate. But it's like they need something, but they don't know what it is that they need. But they think that you have it. And I think the education piece comes in where you have to then turn around to that parent and say, I don't know what you're looking for, but this is what we have to offer. This is the grace that we have to offer. And maybe that's the grace you need, and maybe it's somewhere else. But this is where we are as a community.
And I think
does that make sense?
It does. And I think the education piece actually extends to the whole church, not just the parents. You know, Betsy brought up Modern Family, and part of the point of that show, as I see it, is to really broaden our idea about what a modern family looks like. And maybe we need to do that kind of education for the whole church to broaden our idea of what it means to belong to a church family and what it means to connect and fit in. You know, we need to be coaching and working with our folks and helping them understand that, you know, you can belong to a church and be a part of it, whether you come, you know, once a week, once a month, or once a quarter, that there's a valid way to be and belong. You know, and whether your family has two parents and three kids or 2.5 kids or whatever, or if has, you know, one kid and one parent, or two grandparents and three kids, or, you know,
or three mullets and three gorgeous daughters. There's room for everyone in this full house.
Hey, I think I just wrote my sermon for Sunday.
No, but I think that's true. I think it's, and I think it goes beyond the whole, you know, kind of got doubt movement from maybe 15 years ago or whatever. That it's really, you know, it's different in saying, you know, we're all human beings. We all get it. You know, my rector does not guilt me that we've had a hard time getting to church. She's not calling me up and saying, haven't seen you lately, Betsy. Where are you? You know, worried about that schooling for Ruby. You know, no, that's not happening. You know, that's not happening. And so she's being supportive. She knows that we're transitioning to a new community. She knows that the first year of any new job is rough. You know, she knows that. And she is there and present for me over email and text message and phone calls. You know, the things we have been able to go to are the off Sunday stuff, like the Friday night pub quiz we do like quarterly, you know, at church. And that's great, you know, and people there will be like, oh, we miss you guys. How's it going? How's everything? You know, and that's awesome. That feels good. That makes me feel like I'm not building up a something that I can't go back. Now it's been too long. Now I need to say I've been going somewhere else because it's been too long. You know, so the community, you're right, needs that wider idea too, so so that they let me be who I am.
Right, but that doesn't mean that we're throwing the sacraments out.
No.
That doesn't mean, yeah, that's, and I think that's the piece. It doesn't have to be an either or conversation. You can offer these things and still be sacramental.
Sure.
You know, I've had conversations with teachers before where a kid is just coming to the confirmation class and hasn't been to church the entire time, probably got baptized, hasn't come to church, looking to come to get confirmed in the eighth grade. And I'm like, and I've had people really sort of bristle at that and say, well, how can you let this kid into the class? Shouldn't he, like, you know, take a year off or something before he
remedial
gets
confirmation?
I'm like, you're telling me to kick a kid out of and deny him a sacrament of the church. That's, who knows what it could mean in his or her life?
Like a sacrament
that seems ridiculous.
A sacrament in the Episcopal Church that's, you know, seeking a theology, right? I mean, you know, let's not put up big boundaries around confirmation. Okay,
but maybe his or her sense of community is found in that class, right? I mean, that's the key. It means being open to. It means throwing out some of the old ideas of, well, it's got to be this, this, and this. It's got to be in this order. And maybe saying, well, maybe it doesn't have to be in that order. Maybe it can be in a different order, but we can still be true to what it is that makes us church, but also embrace different ways of being community, different ways of being a modern family.
A postmodern family.
Ooh, see what I did there? See, that was very clever. That was very clever.
I waited all night and you didn't come home. This ain't your home. I waited all night by the living room light and you didn't come home. 'Cause this ain't your home. I baked you a cake and the tea kettle's on. Why don't you come home? I bought you some flowers and I cleaned up the house, but you didn't come home, 'cause this ain't your home. But I'll wait all night tonight. I'll wait all night.
For our Go in Pieces segment, where we plug our parishes, our websites, our Twitter feeds, our Facebook handles, our whatever we've got. So, Kyle, are you on Twitter yet?
I'm still not on Twitter.
Oh, my God. Okay. So we'll hold that against you until next time. But until then, how can people find you and your church?
Well, you can find me on MySpace. No, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find Concord Presbyterian Church there as well as their our website at concordpreschurch.com. Just go look me up on Facebook and say hello.
Betsy, how can the good folks that listen to Popping Collars right now find you?
I am a chaplain at Episcopal Boarding School in Maryland. I'm also on Twitter, and can I share my fun Twitter thing I've been doing?
Absolutely.
That I've really liked, and I think other people should do. There's a group of Anglican monks who are doing this hashtag Advent Word thing. And so what you do is you go to their website, which is at www.ssje.org/Advent Word. And you register your email with them. And so they email you at around the time in the morning in your time zone that they would be getting up to do prayers. So at around like 5 a.m., 4 a.m. And so you get emailed the word for the day. So like the first word was look The second word was remember. And so it's kind of, there's a little meditation. And then you, throughout your day, seek to take a picture of what that word means to you.
Mm.
And then you tweet it out, hashtag Advent word, hashtag remember, hashtag look, or whatever. And it's been very cool to kind of see what other people are coming up with. So I'm another thing I always beat myself up for is, like, I don't journal and, like, you know, do centering prayer and stuff like that. So, like, I need something to kind of be like, oh, well, this is really cool. So I'm kind of finding my own, like, the reflection, and then I'm a visual person. So seeing other people's pictures is really helpful to me. So I've been really liking that.
Very cool. And where can we find you on Twitter?
Oh, well, I don't know. See, this is so bad. Like, I don't tweet enough.
You don't
tell
know what your
Twitter,
you, Twitter
tell
handle
you,
is.
It's so the fact that I'm 40 years old now. It's just so that, you know?
So, Betsy, wow. Somewhere on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter at all. And Greg, you are.
I am all over the place. I am the director of Children and Youth Ministries at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. You can find me on Twitter at ThatGregKnight.
I found my Twitter thing on my phone.
Whoa.
Nice.
At Betsy_Gons. So that's how you
all right. See, you're going to end up with 10 followers.
Oh, it'll be so great.
You can find Popping Collars all over the web. We're at Popping Collars on Twitter. We are on Facebook, Popping Collars. You can download our show on Stitcher and now on TuneIn Radio app. You can also email us at poppingcollars@gmail.com. And so from our family at Popping Collars to yours, keep those collars popped. We'll see you next time. Oh, I stole Betsy's line. That was your line.
Or can I do pop pop like a
pop pop
pop pop? Wait.